Hey everyone, welcome to Her Best Dad Ever. I'm Hector.
I'm Marquet.
And we're just two girl dads on a journey trying to be the best fathers we can be to our growing daughters.
So these are real honest conversations of us sharing life, telling stories, and seeking wisdom from girl dads who've been at it for longer than we have. Here's to learning.
And here's to growing.
Here's to becoming her best dad ever.
If you want to continue following us, find us on social media. Our handle's Her Best Dad Ever. And you can also find us on our website, www.herbestdadever.com. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Her Best Dad Ever. This week's very special guest is a licensed marriage family therapist, director, leader, husband, and of course, girl dad. With a keen insight and sensitive heart, he is trained to assess, diagnose, and treat couples, individuals, and families who are dealing with relationship challenges. In addition to his successful private practice, our guest is the director of counseling ministry at the Lake Avenue Church in Pasadena and the director of MFT training program at Champion Counseling Center in Inglewood, California, with the goal to help and heal. For over 25 years, this amazing man has worked with children, couples, and families. In his personal life, he shows up strong as a husband of 22 years, and an amazing father to his teenage daughters, his two teenage daughters. This one and only very good guy. Please welcome Sega Worku. Yay!
Sega.
Thank you.
Sega, it's good having you back, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's good to be back. It's been a while.
So have you really been doing your practice for over 25 years?
Yeah. I graduated in 97. So I was counting earlier, it's exactly over 25, yeah.
Wow.
And that was from Fuller Theological Seminary, yeah, in Pasadena?
Yep. Awesome. Pasadena, from the School of Psychology, yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, Sega, let's jump right in. Like, in your own words, like, what would you say makes a good girl dad?
Wow. That's a tough one. That's a tough one, but at the same time, easy too, you know, like, The tough questions sometimes have very simple answers, you know. And if I've heard enough stories in my profession working with different adult females, and in a sad way, what we're asked is to be present. I mean, we you can't put a price on the value or the power of just being present. You know, the things that probably a lot of dads would think would be, you know, providing all the needs, putting them in good school, good homes, you know, all the stuff that they need, because they have this need to provide and just spoil, which are all good in their own, you know, in their own merit. But I would say the one thing that would make a best dad is one that's just present, one that's available. And of course, that can look different to different people. Being present could mean a phone call that is predictable, that that girl can count on that. You know, we live with them. So even though we're in the same house, to still be present for dinner or just for those laughs.
We had a guest one time who kind of said something similar. And I love the quote he said. He said, "You got to be where your feet are." He talked about being present, be where your feet are. And that spoke to me because, we can be a million different places in our heads, you know, rather than at home. No, that's a good answer. I think, you know, we wanted to bring you back for our listeners who have maybe heard Sega before. He came on in season one and gave a two-part talk on the importance of therapy. Of course, coming from, you know, as a therapist, he gave a lot of really, really good insights, good wisdom. But we wanted to bring him back today to talk about something specific you know, something that I know will help Marque and I, and hopefully help you, all the listeners. And that's just the developmental mind of a child. Sega, I'm kind of going through this season, and I know Marque is going through this season as well, where there are just a lot of moving parts. There are, you know, quick decisions that need to be made. Kids need to buckle up, get in the car, drop-offs, pickups, like all of these things real quick. And I can find myself just kind of being that, like, I don't know the word, tyrant, or just, you know, just going in, being all about rules, you know, feeling like the dad who's always like barking out orders. And there's something about it that doesn't feel like it should be that way all the time. And so, yeah, some questions that I think I want to ask around that question. The first one is, you know, how do kids, you know, from your experience in your education, how do kids interpret that? Like, how do kids interpret rules, boundaries, and how should we navigate them to set them up for success?
Yeah. So I think, that, for example, that question you have about rules, for example, it really depends on the stage of life for that kid. Okay. Developmentally, where are they? So if they are on a stage where rules and regulations are the most important thing, it's about right and wrong, then those rules that you have would mean a lot to them.
So how do those break up? What are the times in a child's life where maybe rules are more important? Do you have kind of a overall time frame?
Yeah. So and there are different developmental stages that different people have come up with. Some are, for example, there is, I'm trying to think, there are different psychologists who've come up with different stages. And that one is Piaget. You know, for him, what he says are there are four developmental stages. And in there, what you have are, first, for example, there is the, I wish I was prepared for this better. Let's say from birth to age two, it's about knowing their world, knowing their environment. It's about discovery. Mm-hmm. Then when they get a little bit older, 2 to 7 would be about using words or describing pictures that represent objects. Could be language skills, developing new words. When they pick up new words, they're able to express themselves better. So that's kind of they call it the egocentric and struggle to see things from perspective of others. Like, oh, suddenly it's not just me, there's other people. I can express myself in words, but the others see me differently, or others see the world differently. And then as they get older, now they start getting into more the concrete kind of stages of development. And then that's from 7 to 11, you know, that's where they start to think logically, understand concepts. It could be thinking becomes more logical and organized, but very concrete. So if that's the kid, for example, from age 7 to 11, if it's about rules, it means the world to them. Like, if you have rules in the house that says, okay, so-and-so does their chore, this is the time that you organize this, you do this, it gives them, developmentally, it makes sense. So it's easy for them to follow that versus if you don't have rules. Then as they get older, of course, now you have to ease off and kind of pull back. Now it becomes about agreement. Once they become teenagers, then it's about negotiation. It's about give and take. Because at that point, other kids become more important than family. Not that they don't love their family, but they want to be accepted on the outside. So they respond differently. So rules have to be adjusted. You know, some kids don't need curfew because they're home already before the time you want them in. And other kids, it doesn't matter what time curfew is, they'll still be there half hour after the curfew. Right. So that's where you have to pick and choose your battle. So
Picking and choosing battles, that kind of leads me to another thought I had real quick is, you know, the idea of being controlling. I'm also finding in this season that I can quickly default into, you know, if, you know, for a perfect example, Sarai and Eden are kind of at this point where they, there'll be moments where they'll just choose not to hear me or listen. It's like, okay, girls, get in the car and buckle up. And 2 minutes go by and they're still kind of doing whatever. And okay, girls, come buckle up. And they won't. And, you know, I have to be really in touch with myself because I can quickly, you know, either get frustrated, you know, and kind of make it about me, kind of take it personally. But I'm trying to combat the whole idea of kind of controlling the situation. You know, I feel like that's the tendency for me is, I don't know if you feel the same way, Marque, or if you've ever been there, Sega, it's like,
oh yeah.
All right. So now I'm going to control the situation, you know,
never
Sega. Now it's about controlling the situation. So I'm going to, you know, demand and, you know, then it becomes more of a power struggle. Yeah. How do you balance keeping order and being controlling?
Yeah. So now with full disclosure, just because I have an answer does not mean I practice it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. So as long as you give me that way out, then I can speak freely.
For sure.
I had an interview at Faithful Central. I don't know if you saw it. I sent you the link the other day. Yeah. And I watched it with my daughter and I said, come on, let's watch this together. She watched it, said, oh, good. I said, so tell me, how do you think it was? No, Dad, you did really well. And then she said, but I think you should listen to yourself once in a while.
Oh, shoot.
Wow.
I said, thank you very much, you know. But anyway, man. I think you brought up a good point because when we're in that moment, uh-huh. there are so many factors that we're not even aware of. You know what, when we find ourselves wanting to control the situation, there are many factors that are in play there. It could be a time crunch, you know, it could be not having enough sleep, it could be not recognizing the need of the child. You know, there could be different issues with the kid. Just because we don't see it, it does not mean it doesn't exist. For example, if one of your kids, God forbid, if they're disabled, for example, you'll be much, much more patient, right? You're not going to try to control because you know there's a disability. So we pick them up and we put them in, do whatever we have to do because we see there's something. But emotionally, since we don't see it, we forget that they have their own world too. So especially when you see a new behavior with a kid who normally will just jump in and put their seatbelt on, when she doesn't, I mean, who knows? Yeah. Who knows what's going on for her? So just to leave space, it doesn't mean be okay with everything, but just to leave space and try to be creative. And I remember I used to work in a residential facility many years ago. And these are very emotionally disturbed kids, very difficult place to work. But I remember I quickly learned the whole control thing is not going to work. The harder you try, the more they're going to act out. So you have to come up with this creative ways of dealing with them. And I remember one of the things that I used to do was I would thank them for getting in the car and putting their seatbelt on. They're not even in the car yet. It's almost now there's nothing to fight. You know, I'm just saying, thank you. We need to go and I know you're going to get in the car and put your seatbelt on. Thank you, Johnny. And then I'll move on. It's almost like Johnny has no option but to go in and put his seatbelt on.
I'm
not controlling him. I'm kind of ahead of him. But that's because that's survival with those kids.
Right.
Now, with my kids, it's a whole different story. Uh-huh. One of my daughters would get in the car before me and say, Dad, we're late. We need to go there on time. But the other one may still be in her bedroom and say, we need to go, it's late. So it's almost like my role, I need to be able to adjust to their personality. But I think when that control need comes, I would say, I think it's good to ask ourselves and say, what is going on? Why do I have this anxiety or need right now to control? If it's time, I think it's good to let them know. I have to go shopping and then I have to go to work. I have to do this. I'm really running late. Can you help me? You know, join me versus
just forcing get in the car. We need to go and them not have a context for it. That's good. Right. That's good. Sega.
No, that's good. Sega. To that point though, how do we know when we're being too hard on our daughters?
Yeah. That's a tough one. They're very sensitive, right? They don't want to hurt our feelings, so they don't want to tell us sometimes.
Yeah.
They pick up our emotion much faster. Like if your daughter asks that, are you okay? Is everything okay? And you're like, no, I'm okay. Of course. It's like, be careful. There's something that she's seen in your face, on your body language, because they're very in tune with our emotions, versus boys will be completely oblivion of what's going around. But with girls, they do pick up. So, so your question is, how do we become sensitive to their emotions? That's right.
No, I was just asking on just like, how do we know when us fathers are being too hard on our daughters and the idea of controlling the situation and, you know?
Yeah. You know, I two things I would say. One is to do some fact checking of ourselves later on, you know, after we drop the kids to school or to daycare, wherever they are, as we're driving, to kind of assess, how was my morning? How did it go? You know, because we know the feeling that we are left with, it, if we really listen to ourselves, we know that there's how, you know, however it went. The other one is to ask them, to have a discipline to say, so how was the ride to school today? How did I do? So they know that you want their feedback. I mean, if you haven't asked the first time when you ask, they're not going to respond. Of course, they're going to say, no, everything's fine.
Yeah.
But I remember the day that I asked that question to my daughter, because, you know, we get into it in the morning going to school, and I just asked the wrong questions. You know, it's like, did you do the homework? Did you do this? Did you like, I don't know. It comes to me and then I'll ask. And then, of course, there'll be something that didn't go right. And then we get into it. By then, we're at school and I'll drop her off. I feel bad. You know, like it's like I leave thinking, and then at the end of the day, when I pick her up, it's as if nothing happened. No, I did, and we just move on. So one day I said, so I don't like how we end our morning routine. And she said, me too. But I said, but it affects me all day long. And she told me it does affect her too. I'm like, what do you mean? Because when I pick you up, you're happy. And, you know, and she said, no, I think about it during the day.
Wow.
Oh man, that day I said, okay, that was a good feedback, because I didn't know it affected her to that extent.
Wow.
So then we had my second daughter to evaluate us in the morning when I take her. When I take them to school, I drop the older one, and then later on I'll say, so how did I do today? She said, you did okay, Dad, but did you have to ask about homework in the morning? I'm like, I know, I did it again, you know. So I would say ask, you know, if it bothers them.
Good.
So once they get used to it, I think that you're preparing to when they become a teenager, right?
Yeah.
That's the hardest battle.
Right.
So the habits that you develop while they're young, it pays off later on down the line.
If you're your daughter kind of keeping that lane open for them to give feedback and they know that you're open to that.
There you go. Yeah.
Wow.
Then you'll be good. Easier. Yeah. That's what comes to mind. Yeah.
So what, talk to me about the negative effects. You know, I think maybe to some of us it might be obvious, but from a clinical perspective, you know, for the dad who does, you know, default to that, who does struggle with that, like I know a lot of us do, I, you know, and I'll own that for me. I do as well. What are the negative effects? Like what are our daughters experiencing when we are overbearing, when we are controlling, when we are, just kind of really, really rigid in that way and just always on edge and stressed out.
That's a tough question, Hector, because, you know, as a therapist, we work with a lot of people who, you know, we work with people who are having struggles in their life, right? So when you ask me this kind of question, I'm like, you know, I can give you the answer, but I just want you to know kids are very resilient and they adapt. So two dads, let's say Hector and Marque raised two kids the same way, both of them controlling. It doesn't mean they both are going to come out the same way. One may actually be stronger from that experience and become even more determined to be independent and live. And then the other may just completely surrender and just let go of life and be controlled. So I just want to put it out there so people don't think it's not, parenting is not like a cookie cutter baking cake.
Every kid's different.
You put this and it comes out. Every kid is different and every father is also different. But I think the other thing to think about it is it's like going to school. Like, we are introducing them to this life of relationship with a man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This is what gets imprinted in their brain. Even if it's negative sometimes, that's what they know. That's what's familiar.
Yeah.
So as adults, they find themselves kind of leaning towards or being attracted towards what's familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine if you are a very controlling dad and, you know, you have great kids, everything looks okay. You know, they're successful, they grow up, then they're ready for a relationship. So when they meet someone who has that personality tendency to be controlling, even though they won't put words to it, they don't know, but somehow they get attracted to it because that's what's familiar. It's almost like we want to recreate what we had, try to make it better. So the danger would be if they think that's the norm, if they think that's how relationship with a man is, then most likely they'll end up with somebody like the guy that they love the most, who's their dad. So we are setting an example. We're setting an experience for them. If a man is more predictable, available, gentle, that's what they know.
Yeah.
So they're going to grow up and look for the guy who is available, gentle, and present. So I would say that's the problem. Now, none of us are perfect parents, but at least we need to be aware of ourselves so we can keep trying to do better from wherever we are on that spectrum. Yeah.
Sure. Yep. So, man, on that note too, I mean, that's a really sobering thought that, you know, they're naturally attracted to what they're familiar with. You know, in that same vein of discipline and just trying to give instruction, giving direction, you know, the topic of, you know, voice inflections, or, you know, raising your voice, or maybe having moments if you're trying to get their attention to, you know, speak more intensely. What are some things to caution us on there? Is that kind of another thing that's like, there's no right or wrong, or are there some lines that maybe, you know, shouldn't be crossed or that we should be aware of?
That's a good question.
So, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. So I guess my question for that dad would be, what are you trying to accomplish? What is the goal? What is the goal? And is that the only way to get your, reach that goal?
If
it's about them getting in the car, you know, if you really think about it, there is another way to do it. You are creative enough to find a better way to do it. But if you're used to it, though, if you're used to raising your voice, if you're used to using basically fear, right? So that's instilling fear so they can comply.
I didn't say that, Sega. I was trying.
I know.
You put words in my mouth.
I know.
Right.
But that's very easy for men. Easy for us to go in that direction.
Dang.
But I would say there is a different way.
Yeah. I know.
So that would be the question: is what is it that you're trying to achieve, and is that your only way? Any other way other than raising your voice? And if there is, are you willing to do it? I mean, if you say no, that's just who I am, that's how I talk, that's how my dad and mom talked to me, that's how I complied, so you're just repeating that same thing in generations. But if you say, yep, that's how I was raised, that's what comes naturally, but I need to find a better way, trust me, you talk to the girls, they'll tell you a better way to do it. I have a friend who has such a hard time when they became teenagers and they want to go out with their friends, they want to go to different parties and stuff. He just could not handle it, him and his wife. And I remember one day he sat them down and said, "Hey guys, listen, I'm having a hard time. I'm struggling." And they're like, "What do you mean?" They're like, I can't sleep when you're not at home. I'm stressed. I'm thinking the worst. And I don't know what to do. I'm really, really struggling." And they're like, oh, Shraddha, so what can we do? And he's like, I don't know. So they gave him a list of things that they will do. We'll text you every hour. We'll put something on our phone. We'll do this. Will that be good? He said, oh, thank you. I that would really help. It's almost like he didn't think that it was going to turn out that way. Yeah. But basically what he did was he owned his challenge. He said, I'm struggling versus you're doing this and you're staying late. And he's frustrated, but he's saying, you're frustrating me. But what he did was he turned it around and said, I'm getting frustrated. I need help. So now they're part of the solution. They're not just an object that needs to be told where to go, what to do. So I think it's good to recognize that we have a need as fathers. Mm. You know, as fathers, we want to be respected. Mm-hmm. We want to be liked. We want to be appreciated because we're willing to go to the ends of the earth to protect them and to provide for them. So we know that that's a fact. So we don't need to prove anything more, or our kids don't need to do anything, but we can say, you know, this is how I feel. Mm. How can we make this better together? This is what I want. What I want is for you to be safe. And what you want is you want to go out. So how can we meet halfway? Okay, I still can go out, but I can be safe. How do I know? And then let them come up with the solution. So to take that burden off of ourselves that we have to, you know, make sure everything is controlled, everything is in the right way. Right. And because it's just a matter of time. Once they grow up, then they're going to start actually reacting even worse than before. And it's really difficult. Yeah. Well, because and then they go out and meet other guys. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing that's been so, well, I'll just say, I'm just so nervous about what's to come, you know, if I'm just transparent and honest. You talked about like just the biggest battle is the teenage years, you know? And my immediate thought goes to, the question, like, what would you say, how can I rephrase the question? What tools in our toolbox as men and fathers should we have as our daughters are growing up and get to that stage? You know, what tools would you say every father should have that to help them in that hard season?
Well, if you ask me, what would you do differently if you know what you know now, then those are the ways to, that's another way to think about it too, because it doesn't matter. Even as a therapist, I may know a lot, head knowledge, but experience is very different. So I think one thing I would say is somehow find a way to convince yourself that you cannot control their life. They are independent beings that grow and want to do well, and they want to flourish, and they want to be beautiful. There is nothing that you can do to convince them more than they already are. So if they already want to grow, for example, I think last time, I don't know if I've mentioned it, but I like using this analogy of a flower. You know, if I give you a pot of flour, like how much are you going to talk to that flower and convince the flower to be beautiful? Like it's crazy, right? Every flower wants to be beautiful.
Right.
But they have need, right? And the need is the soil, the water, the sun. So it's like, what is it that our daughters need from us, from dads?
Right.
They want us to be available. They want us to love them. They want us to play with them. They want us to create memories with them. And at the end of the day, to know that this will not last forever. There will be a time when they're pulled away, and that's okay. I've done my part while they're young, and be okay with them slowly separating so we don't go into that fight or that struggle to control. I mean, literally, when they're born, they come with their own wiring, like a rose. There's no way it will turn out to be a tulip. And a carnation will never turn out to be a rose. You know, it is who they are. They still are different. They still grow up differently. So especially for those who have more than one child, to even accept that their differences.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, what they need is the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you give the water, this, you know, the sun, and that's the soil. Good. You have to just walk away. You have to be okay with it. So not to fight. So usually what happens is if we don't invest in the early age stages of their life, then we want to play catch up when they're teenagers, and it just doesn't work. Then we feel rejected. Then we feel being pushed away.
Wow.
So play. Play is the language for kids. You know, if you play music with them, dance with them, you know, have dinner. My daughter still talk about this one night. I had them dress up and we had this big dinner there. My wife was out of town and, you know, I kind of treated them like royalty and, you know, we did all this. It was just a fun thing that I did. It's crazy. Now after like 10 something years, they're still talk about
it. Wow.
I don't know why I don't keep doing that kind of stuff, but
yeah.
I think creating memories to be intentional.
That's good.
To take photos and to kind of keep it in their mind. So that's one thing that they'll remember about you. That's one thing that they would know who their dad is. Yeah.
That's good.
So going back to something that you mentioned that I think is part of kind of what we're talking about here, which is, you know, you're going to plant seeds that are going to kind of take effect and kind of you'll see the consequences, see the results kind of as they get older in the teenage years. You know, the piece that you talked about owning your own stuff, rather than blaming them for your frustration. Mm-hmm. I've been in enough therapy to learn that, you know, there's something that happens, that's very unhealthy when, you know, you put your stuff on somebody else, kind of make them feel responsible for your own stuff. Mm-hmm. What does that typically look like? What are the clinical terms for, you know, a child or a daughter, you know, who does grow up kind of with that unhealthy connection, you know, with that unhealthy, you know, oh, you know, feeling responsible for their dad's emotions, feeling, you know, because, you know, of kind of how the dad handled those things. I don't know if that makes sense, but talk to us a little bit about that.
So I think maybe one way to see it is like, what is the one thing that just triggers your pain? Like, what is the one thing that you find regularly with one of your daughters that you just keep getting at it? What's that one thing? Mm-hmm. And then take a look at it and say, why am I so triggered by this thing? Mm. You know, probably their mom is not triggered by it, but somehow you are, or somebody else is not. And usually that has some kind of a root somewhere in your own life. Mm. You know, for somebody, it could be the way you eat food. For somebody, it could be the way they sit. It could be whatever it is that regularly keeps getting us into this conflict with our daughters. Mm. And to stop and to look at it and say, why is that bothering me? What is that in me that it doesn't mean I shouldn't correct her? It doesn't mean I don't have to teach her. But it says something about me more than her. And I think we said it a little bit earlier. Yeah. So we project, I think as parents, without knowing it, unconsciously, we project our stuff onto our children, onto our daughters.
Yeah.
And I think being aware of that is a big gift. And we still can say the same thing, but with a different tone, with a different, you know, non-verbals. Because kids don't just listen to your words. They also see your physical presence, your tone of voice. Because for them, it's survival. You are not just another dad who just showed up and the next day somebody else. You're it.
Mm.
So in their child mind, without you, I'm dead. Literally, I'm gone.
Mm. Right.
So
right.
So the way they pay attention to you is very different than the way we pay attention to them.
Yeah.
Because we're distracted. We have a lot of things to do. Uh-huh. You work, you have to do the dishes, you have to do this. So we're just going on and we think we know them, but they know us more than we know them because they're watching. They're sitting on their high chair. They're just watching us.
Mm.
They know how we come, how we go. So as they get older, they have figured us out or understands our space more than we even know ourselves. Which is scary when you think about it.
You took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say that. That's scary.
Okay. Yeah. And when they're young, it's okay. You know, they, there's much going on. But when they get older, that's where they're going to come and challenge us. And we have to be prepared to be challenged. Yeah.
Yeah. So being able to own own whatever those things are that are triggering us, and be conscious enough of that so that we're not putting it on them. And even to the extreme where we let them know, hey, like, you know, this, this is, I'm having a problem, which is what you said earlier, you know, help me, help me with it. No, I think that's really good.
And so what you're saying is every father should be in therapy.
If you call that therapy, I guess so. Yeah, you're clueless. But you know, Mark, that's a sad thing is not just therapy, but even this kind of conversation. I really applaud you guys for doing this because the only time people ask for help or come to therapy is after things have gone completely out of control. But we're playing a lot of catch up. We're kind of, you know, counting the loss and trying to move forward. But if we just sit like this and have conversation, what you're doing, I can't tell you. I wish I can hear this kind of conversations when my kids were much younger. You know, even if I'm in this field, because I'm exposed more to challenges. People are who are really, you know, in difficult places. So I think if you call it therapy, I guess it is. But I would say just have a huddle to sit around, to be proud of being girls' dads. I'm sure a lot of your listeners kind of listen to it intently because they're living it at the moment. You know, things are still there. They're still, they'll take one thing out of this and I'm sure they'll apply it. So, and then to be honest, also with one another too, you know, if there are things that I don't know about me, we need to speak into each other's lives. Yeah. Because our experience is very similar. The person may be different, the kid may be different, but overall the father's experience is very similar.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Wow.
That's good, man. Wow.
Sega. This is good. This is good. And I hope our listeners are hearing this and can do the work of self-examination.
Yeah.
As I'm really trying to do, and asking those questions, why am I so bothered by this right now? Why am I trying to be so intense and controlling right now? Discovering what that part inside of me will help kind of understand and help me show up as a better, kinder, gentler, more understanding father. That's good stuff.
That's good, man.
Sega, we like to ask this question to all of our guests before they leave. And I think this came after we had you last time. I don't know if we asked you this question, but it's a question around legacy. You know, this idea of how you'll be remembered by your daughters after you're gone and, you know, they're continuing on and, you know, living out, you know, the things that you modeled for them. So the question is, you know, with legacy in mind, what do you want to remember? What do you want to be remembered, or how do you want to be remembered by your daughters? What is the lasting impact that you want to have on them?
Wow, that's a good one. I think for me, I was in my early 30s when we had our kids. So I feel like I was matured enough or know myself enough that I made some decisions, conscious decisions, I think I hope I'll never regret. And that is being at home in the evening time, being available. That's when I stopped my practice. I didn't see anybody in the evenings just to be present because there are a few days that I come in late and everybody's asleep. I mean, it's kind of a lonely experience to know that they're asleep and then next morning you're on the run again. I want to be remembered as somebody who has listened to them, even in that 10, 15 minutes drive to school and back. That quality conversation time are really crucial. And I don't want them to idealize me and think I'm like perfect because that's a setup, you know, that then they're going to get in trouble with the guys they're going to see. So I would say he was available and he listened to us, because that's how you know someone, right? If you're with someone and you've listened to them or they've allowed or they've heard you, that's when you feel like you are known. So we all have the need to be known and to be accepted. And I think to be known, it does require time and like emotional availability. So I hope it would be, he was available, we know him, and he did listen to us.
Yeah.
Wow.
That would be awesome. I'll be very happy with that. If they say that, I'll be very happy.
Well, this was beautiful. I think this
it was
just a beautiful journey for all of us to, you know, to be fathers and to, you know, try to do the best we can, you know, with the opportunity we have.
And that's, I think that's the thing. If this conversation motivates you to continue the journey and try to get better, I think it's great. But if this kind of conversation makes you feel defeated and kind of, I can't do this, then that was the wrong message to get out of it. So we, like I said earlier, we're all in this journey together. All we can do is try to make it better and hope for the best. Yeah.
Well, I'm done after this. Wow. I'm just done. I'm hanging on my cleats. It's over. Sega, thank you for being
Thank you so again. Much, Sega. Yeah.
And hopefully we can have you back again.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
we'd love to. That was fun. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate you, what you're doing. And I look forward to hearing some of your old podcasts now. I need to catch up.
Of course. So once again, for all the dads out there, know that we stand with you. Know that we see you. Be strong. Be encouraged. And continue to follow us on our journey of becoming our best dad ever. Peace.